Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Raheemy Harrison Grody, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You know, history's a history. Like, I'm kind of done talking about it. Like, you go back so much all the time, and those days are over. So we're bringing players in here that want to really just change everything up and do things a different way.
You sure about that?
That's Ryan Poles, and that one gave us all pause. This is Raheemy Harrison Grody on 670 The Score, and fans are mad at Ryan Poles today, and they frankly should be, because Ryan Poles said that at the draft, and let's go over his draft picks from 2025, shall we? That, unfortunately, was a major part of the storyline in the Bears' 52-21 loss to the Lions. Colston Loveland was drafted out of Michigan at 10th overall. 10th. So that person should be a functional part of your offense now. Colston Loveland had one target in yesterday's game out of 68 plays run by the Bears. Luther Burden, the wide receiver out of Missouri from East St. Louis, who they were very excited to get, he was drafted 39th overall. So Burden in yesterday's game had one catch for 5 yards. He was targeted twice. I'm a little more lenient when it comes to a receiver, but he was considered a first-round pick by many and ends up dropping to the second round. The Bears were thrilled about it. This is what got to a lot of people. Ozzie Trapillo, the offensive lineman out of Boston College, 7th offensive lineman picked in the draft. He was taken 56th overall. He was inactive.
It's a
healthy
pillow.
Scratch. Shamar Turner, out of Texas A&M, the defensive lineman, he was taken 62nd overall. He was inactive. Then the Bears had a trade where they dropped, and they had a trade with the Bills, if you'll recall. Pick 132 and pick 169, they received to give up pick 109. So dropping in those spots, there were also several running backs that came off the board over that span. Then you go to Ruben Hippolyte, which is who they took out of Maryland at 132. Zay Frazier, who we mentioned earlier, the defensive back out of UTSA, 169. He is out for the season, we know, with a personal issue. Luke Newman, the offensive lineman out of Michigan State, was number 195. And Kyle Monongai, 233rd overall, the running back out of Rutgers.
Are you surprised or simply displeased? That is the question.
What?
In terms of the usage of this year's draft picks. Because I stand on, I'm displeased, but I'm also surprised. I'm both. Because, no, listen, Colston Loveland was the 10th overall pick, and at the time you were thinking, okay, what are they going to do? And it was the fact that they took two offensive players back-to-back when they had specific needs. That's what strikes me about this. Especially when you look at the running back position right now.
I think what my issue has always been with this team is there's putting a roster together and then there's building a team. And Brad Holmes and the Lions built a team. They built from the inside out. The two biggest names that they started with when they wanted to do their rebuild were Aiden Hutchinson and Penei Sewell. Two who were considered generational talents. I hate using that word anymore, but they both were considered that. And it took a little bit for Sewell, I think, to be that person, but he absolutely matured into one. He's a huge part of the reason the Lions are so successful. When you consider that they built from the inside out, they found their cornerstones. when we talk about the Bears' cornerstones, or we talk about who the Bears depend on the line, from a drafting standpoint, it's drafting a player with traits like Jervon Dexter, but wanting him to be different than what his system was when you played at Florida. You're asking people to be different. You decided to build from the outside in here. When it came to guys like Kyler Gordon, then you obviously have
Brisker.
Jaquan Brisker. Velus Jones famously was your first offensive pick. And I even got flacked then for talking about how you need those people to help build your team.
Well, Brisker and Gordon are hits. Those are hits.
But you can't throw away the rest of that draft and say, you know, these are experimental picks, or you have the capital to have all of these risks that you want to take drafting trait-based players and not necessarily what they look like on tape. They pay people for their potential. You know, we just talked earlier about the contract to Dayo Odengbo, for example. They are wanting him to be this person. My main issue, though, with all of this is, with what proof do you have that you've hired people that you can even trust to positively change these people? Ben Johnson might be the first proof of it, and Ben Johnson got here 3 years into the process.
Also, I think, Mark, specifically, when you talk about Ryan Poles, and this is what I'll always go back to, show me who on this team is good. And when I say good, I mean someone who can be elite, someone who other teams fear and game plan for, either on offense or defense.
To some degree, Jaquan Brisker, yes. I mean, I've definitely heard offensive coordinators on the other side say, you have to circle that guy. We know Kyler Gordon is on the rise, so those are two guys right there.
I'll take this year's draft class out of it. We've got 3 years of people to work with.
Yeah.
And you're saying you're going to give me one guy, maybe two out of 3 years?
Oh, yeah. No, there should be more.
He
asked the question.
He spent two draft picks on punters.
Yeah. No, he asked the question. I answered the question.
No, you're right.
As far as the draft this year, I can't, after 2 weeks, say guys like Ozzie Trapillo, Luther Burden, Colston Loveland, and Shamar Turner are busts. Now, the background, the resume says it's possible, but what we've learned, at least, it's not good. Like, Ozzie Trapillo being inactive is jarring. There is no doubt about that, because he is a guy that was supposedly competing for the left tackle spot. What we learned, and what the Bears learned in real time, is that he's not a left tackle. That they thought, and I called it all along. I said that there's no way a guy who played that little left tackle at Boston College is going to come into the pros and be a left tackle in his first year. He's a right tackle. Luther Burden, I think that maybe I'm wrong. Can we all agree that Luther Burden, it's very possible that Luther Burden is still going to be a good player in the NFL. It's still very possible that Colston Loveland is going to be a good player in the NFL. I don't know about Shamar Turner, but at least those three guys.
You know why you don't know about Shamar Turner? Because you haven't seen enough of Shamar Turner.
Well, it's wild. Like, the Shamar Turner thing is very interesting. I'll take you guys into the locker room a couple of weeks ago, heading into the Minnesota game. And I remember, like, Shamar Turner, like, this really gregarious personality, like, that on the first day, like, that we met and I loved, and, like, everybody's favorite guy. He was so quiet in that locker room. I went up to him, and he did not want, I don't even know if he heard me, but he didn't want to talk, or it didn't seem. And this is heading into, this is without a season, a game. And I was like, what is going on here? What's going on with that gregarious guy, Shamar Turner? And to me, that said, I wonder if Shamar Turner is not a part of things. I wonder if he got some bad news about an evaluation for right now, that he was told not yet. And it seems like the same thing with Luther Burden, the same thing with Ozzie Trapillo, the same thing, well, Manungai to a different degree, did not get a carry last week, lost 2 yards on a carry this week. But there are some issues that are jarring, but the point is, I'm not going to sit here and tell you guys how great I thought Colston Loveland looked in training camp and then now say these guys are all busts.
But here's the issue, though. This is Raheemy Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. We're talking about the Bears personnel. Let's play a game where we go back to the 2023 draft, okay?
Ooh, I love that game.
First round offensive tackle Darnell Wright. Second round defensive lineman, as I mentioned, Jervon Dexter. Tyreek Stevenson. Your third round defensive tackle was Zach Pickens, who I feel like we're talking about in a way the same way we did with Shamar Turner, where he didn't see time. And when he did see time, it was limited. Then you have Roschon Johnson in the fourth round. Other picks included Tyler Scott, who got cut. Linebacker Noah Sewell, who's had to play a lot. Defensive back Terrell Smith, unfortunately injured. Defensive back Travis Bell and safety Kendall Williamson.
Both gone.
This is a thing. This is how you build your team.
Also, this is why I didn't want it. That's why I didn't include this year's draft picks when I asked the question, because I do believe they deserve time to develop. I don't need my second round pick to be an immediate guy necessarily, but he's got to be contributing
absolutely
during the first season of his existence.
I thought Shamar Turner, like for example, would have been contributing. Hey, Jervon Dexter, when he came in, he contributed right away. I'm at the point though, and Layla just went through the 2023 draft where I'm like, okay, where's the impact for Jervon Dexter? You know what I mean? Where is he not going to be able to stick here?
And so when we have this discussion and try to broaden it out and try to take a landscape of like Ryan Poles drafted players, my whole thing is this. It's one thing if the Bears are 1-1 and looking good and improving. Coming off the blowout loss of yesterday, it just makes it that much more glaring that the guys you have on the field aren't getting the job done, and these are the guys that are holding back your healthy scratches from getting on the field.
Let's go to 2022. As we mentioned, Kyler Gordon, Jaquan Brisker, both in the second round. Velus Jones Jr., a player that the Bears thought had traits and could develop similar pattern, is in the third round. Braxton Jones is your starting left tackle, but he was challenged by three other people in the offseason. As your sitting left tackle, Dominique Robinson was pick number 174. Zachary Thomas in round 6. Treston Ebner, round 6. Ebner. Doug Kramer, who was playing at center, but they never intended him on using him as a center. Round pick 6207. To Tyree Carter, round 7. That's an offensive lineman. Safety Elijah Hicks was a 7th round pick. And Trenton Gill, who was the other punter they drafted.
Elijah Hicks, good.
I think part of the issue, too, is when we talk about players like Karan Amagaji, individually, he may get too much flack, but we talk about him like where he was drafted and valued by this team, which was 3rd round, 75th overall. And he's a healthy scratch.
No, if you have a 3 next to your name, you're not helping the Bears during Ryan Poles' time drafting players. That's just the reality of where we are as you go up and down the list, and there were no 3rd-round picks. We jokingly said he wants to avoid that. So, but now you look at the 2nd-round picks like, well, dang, the 2nd-round picks ain't doing a whole lot either.
Well, and therefore, when all these decisions fall at the feet of scouting and the GM, who was not only retained, but extended.
Yeah, he was. I will tell you that on the Take the North podcast, TTN, that Dan Weider had that question for us in our predictions. Who is going to be the most disappointing player for the Bears? I did say Luther Burden. And I kind of figured this because he missed the offseason program because he wasn't there for it. So, like, that stuff is real. And, you know, part of my reasoning, too, was, like, that early in the season and you got all those other guys that are kind of ahead of him. Like, I just didn't think there was going to be a whole lot in the cupboard early on for Luther Burden. But there eventually has to be. And if the season keeps going the way it is,
he's the DJ
they're just gonna put players in to put players in.
And frankly, right now, you're hoping that the head coach changes this process. You're hoping that the head coach
do something different.
Fixes something that has been innate with this front office when it comes to how they view people. It's the hope of potential. It's the hope of what they think they're going to see. It's them optimistically paying people for work that they haven't necessarily done yet. But you have nothing proving you can change anyone.
Layla, don't you think it's already happened? Don't you think that Ben Johnson is probably the one that says, I can't use Ozzie Trapillo, or I can't scheme Colston Loveland, right? I can't use Shamar Turner to some degree because if Ryan
Poles
Ryan Poles had the same power that we perceive that he once did, he might be telling. You don't
These
think
guys
he would have told
get on the floor.
Oh yeah, you don't think he would have told Matt Eberflus? Because I mean that was the whole thing with Flus. He had complete power over Matt Eberflus. This coach is different, so I do wonder what Ben Johnson has already said to his GM in terms of I can't. You don't need to dress Ozzie Trapillo, which is a shame.
But how sure are you about that? Because
I'm not. I'm surmising.
I think there were some players that were Matt Eberflus type of players. Like Jervon Dexter, I think, was somebody who Eberflus thought he could use. And even he said things like, we need a 3 technique, and he didn't get what he wanted either.
Right.
Something to consider. This is Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score. Coming up next, we want to take more of your calls. We have some already. 312-644-6767, because this is a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by BC Bank and Great Clips.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
This hour is sponsored by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Affordable implants, life-changing smiles.
Adam Hogue says...
Adam Hogue, Bears Insider.
What's up, everyone? My name's Adam Hogue. This is the CHGO Bears Podcast.
Host of the Hogue and Johns Podcast.
This is a losing culture, and Ben Johnson has his hands full in trying to flip it and turning a blind eye to that culture and all the problems that not only existed last year, but quite frankly have existed since you and I started covering this team. That's not how you fix it.
Adam Hogue.
Adam Hoagie or Hogue, excuse me. I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
With Raheemy Harrison Grody on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score.
Let's go to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. He is also on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score, as you're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers. We see Adam Hogue. Adam Hogue, CHGO Bears, of course, coverage, and also of the Hogue and Johns podcast. Good to see you on this Friday, Adam.
You too, guys. Bears desperately need a win this weekend, and it's not going to be easy.
Well, do you think it's likely, though, when the Cowboys have given up, I don't know, about a billion yards in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, but the Bears have given up a billion and one. that's what makes this game so hard to predict, because when you got two defenses like this that you just don't feel like you can count on, it makes it hard to really have an idea how this is going to play out. And I think the thing that scares me and has me leaning towards the Cowboys right now is what this Cowboys offense has been. You know, it was pretty controversial for them to hire Brian Schottenheimer. And, you know, he was the OC the last couple of years under Mike McCarthy, but McCarthy was calling the plays. So you not only were promoting from within, but you knew there was going to be some offensive change. Now you're hiring a new defensive coordinator, Matt Eberflus, and I don't know that his scheme particularly fits some of these players that they have down there, and so I think they're struggling there. But offensively, Dak looks great. They're number 7 overall in the league right now in EPA through 2 weeks, and what people might not realize is Javonte Williams, and nobody had this as a prediction before the season, but he's been the number 1 running back in EPA the first couple weeks of the season. They've been running the ball at will, and it's looked really good, and that's concerning to me when I see what this defense has been giving up for the Bears the first two games.
Adam, I know you're not the only one concerned, because you just brought up those three letters that I was told by one head coach are the most important outcome, even more important than turnover margin. That is EPA. I look at that, and I look at Dak Prescott as the much more experienced quarterback, someone who's been doing this for a long time, and the margin of error for Ben Johnson, as great a play caller as he is, the margin of error seems to be so slim unless they can get a running game going to control this game that I don't know how you could pick the Bears.
Yeah, and you know, I thought Adam Johns did a good job this week of taking a look in one of his written pieces on our website at allchgo.com about, you know, going back to what Ben said about that EPA, specifically in the drop back game, throwing the ball, and how that's a huge indicator of success these days, even more than turnover margin. And you know, his point was it's still not where it needs to be. They've kind of, if I remember right off the top of my head, I think they've risen into the teens in that category. Now, my brain immediately went to, hey, that's actually progress. So, it's not where it needs to be, but I do feel like it's moving in the right direction. I feel like Caleb Williams moved in the right direction last week. I came away watching that offensive film, which I waited to do until Tuesday because the defense was so bad that Monday required the attention of the defense. By the time I got around to Caleb's game, I thought he looked pretty good last week in Detroit. Looked calm, comfortable, feet, everything lined up. And now they got to continue that this week. But it's really that running game that has been pulling this Bears offense back, in my opinion. I think the numbers show that. You know, the Bears success rate, which is just simply measures, you know, how often are you running a successful play, they're 31st in the league through 2 weeks. And I was kind of surprised to see that because it's like, well, they do seem to be making some progress, but it just goes to show you there's a lot of work to still be done here. I do think that this opportunity this week against this Cowboys defense, which has really struggled, they don't have a great pass rush, even though they signed Jadeveon Clowney. Yeah. He's never really been that, you know, elite pass rusher. He's not going to replace Michael Parsons by any means. So I just don't know if the Bears are going to be able to run the ball consistently. And that's why I wonder if we're going to see some changes. I wonder if Mnung guy gets more carries this week. I didn't think Swift looked particularly great in pass protection last week. He's dealing with a quad injury. So why not mix things up a little bit more, see if you can get more out of the running game, because you just got to have it. It's putting too much pressure on Caleb Williams to have a bad defense and a poor running game.
Yeah, it just goes against everything that Ben Johnson wants to do. And not everything is going to be exactly the way it was in Detroit, but he definitely would like to take that aspect. I do worry, too, about some of these Dallas defenders waking up, too, because similar to the Bears, there are names on that defense. You know, you mentioned Jadeveon Clowney, Kenny Clark, Osu Odighizuwa, really good. Dante Fowler. I mean, these are all veteran players who at any time could wake up, like the Bears defense as well, which has been hibernating. So maybe comment on that, Hogue. And to your point about the running game, I mean, are we going to get to the point where Ben Johnson is going to be even more creative with more jet sweeps, with maybe DJ Moore running the ball more? And I know it almost sounds desperate, but you're so right. They've got to get that thing back on.
Well, how dare you not mention the sand god, Jack Sandborn?
Oh, the Sandman.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sorry.
No, you know,
Reddy Stewart.
Reddy Stewart's done a nice job filling in for Deron Bland.
He's the only one.
So, yeah. We liked Reddy Stewart, so good for him. You know, Sanborn's kind of playing a little bit out of position, though. They're asking him to be way more than he had to be for the Bears. Is that Sam backer who is only in on base down? So, you know, I think that just he's not playing poorly, but he's a little bit, when you're asking him to run a little bit more and cover the middle of the field, I think that's a tougher task for him. So maybe Ben Johnson can come up with some answers there. DeAndre Swift has actually had, I don't have the number in front of me right now, but his yards before contact is actually like 2.3 something, I think. And that's an indication that he's the line is keeping guys. It's not like he's getting hit in the backfield. So the point there is, it's an indication they should be getting more out of the running game when he's getting the carry. Is he not hitting the right gap? Is he not following, you know, the running lanes? I don't know for sure. But if you're a coach and you see that number and you're watching the tape and you feel that number, to me, it's another indication that, hey, we got to try something different. Maybe that is DJ Moore. Maybe that is more for Kyle Manungai, who maybe you can trust him to hit the A-gap a little bit harder and pick up the 5 or 6 yards that's there, because that's still a good, successful run play. I think this game is going to tell us a lot about some of these little issues that persist offensively, even though I think we are seeing some progress in the passing game. And the one thing, to not just like keep this all negative, Roma Dunze's development here is an enormous story. What he's done the first two games shouldn't be glossed over. This is the type of production that you want from a guy that you drafted in the top 10. and he's doing it. He's delivering it, and he's still got some more opportunities to improve because he had a couple drops last week on top of it. So let's not minimize that. Caleb the Rome, it's what everybody signed up for. It's what Ryan Poles signed up for when he drafted those two guys together. And as much as it hurts to see this team 0-2 and struggling in a lot of different areas, big picture-wise for the future, that's a huge development.
This segment with Adam Hoge is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Adam, I'm glad you brought that up because I feel like when I think about what Rome Odunze was able to do at Washington especially, like the connection that he had with Michael Penix was incredible. Like you could see the timing play out there. You could see Penix throw balls where I feel like only Rome could catch them. And he was so good in traffic too. His athleticism, of course, against lesser secondaries against him really shined. I do feel like you're seeing some of that echo in the spots that Caleb Williams is putting Rome Odunze in when he throws him the ball. I feel like he's not afraid to throw him a ball in traffic. He's not afraid to go to him in double and even sometimes triple coverage. Is it bold? Yes. Is it always the best choice? Maybe, maybe not. But I feel like that is something that plays to his strength and really what you saw him do well in college.
Yeah, without a doubt, it's a good observation, Layla. I mean, I was a huge fan of Rome's coming out. Saw him play a bunch that season. You know, it's because Washington was all over our TVs with how well they were playing and the run that they made. He is not going to be the most sudden wide receiver or the fastest guy that's just running these incredible routes that's going to dust the defenders. That's not necessarily his game. But he's more of that savvy route runner. I always go back to a compliment that Keenan Allen gave him early last year. It might have even been before the regular season even started, where he said that Rome was already ahead of where Keenan, potential Hall of Famer, was at, when he was a rookie, when he was young, that Rome was already ahead of him in terms of the little intricacies that go into route running and how to set up a defender and how to, which step to jab right here so that you go the other direction, like whatever it is that goes into the route running at the NFL level. And some guys just never master it. Some guys are just so fast or so explosive or so sudden that they just feel like, I don't need to worry about all this stuff, and they just sort of freelance. Well, what I think Rome's strengths are is he really is dialed in all that stuff, and he's so technically sound too when the ball's in the air. His ball tracking is elite. And the way that he's able to put his hands up late or sometimes not at all to really play mind games with the cornerback for them to not even realize the ball is in the air coming that way. That's the stuff that Rome is so good at. And that's not to say he's not fast. That's not to say he's not sudden. He's just not the most sudden or fast at his position. He's still got plenty of those traits, though, to go along with all those technical things. The sky's the limit for him. He can really be one of the best wide receivers in the league.
Rome's been the best story, in my opinion, of this season so far, which isn't saying much because, the Bears are 0-2. But Adam, speaking of pass catchers, I was told there would be tight ends. Nine targets between Cole Kmet and Colston Loveland. I know Ben Johnson said it's going to be addressed this week. What do you expect?
Well, and meanwhile, the Bears have been running the 12 personnel like we predicted a ton. I think they're fourth in the league in using 12 personnel through 2 weeks. So it's not like they're not out there. And I don't know that the tape shows that it's not like they're not open. I think it's a matter of calling the plays, dialing up their number, whether it's Caleb looking that way. The numbers are alarming right now for Caleb Williams when he's not throwing to Rome Odunze. And what's interesting about that to me is that sort of what we're already talking about, the throws to Rome have been some of the harder throws. The throws that you should be getting to DJ Moore, those should be closer to the line of scrimmage. They should be shorter. They should be easier. Same thing to the tight ends. Use them as a safety valve. Hit them in the flat or on shallow crossers. The type of throws that theoretically should be easier to make. And so far, the Bears haven't gotten enough out of that. I do think that Ben Johnson's done a great job this week of taking accountability for that in terms of his own play calling and dialing some of that up. So we'll see if Colson Loveland has a little bit of a coming out party this week, because I think especially when you consider how much the Cowboys typically will sit back in a too high safety shell, not necessarily blitz a lot. Against these zone looks, these tight ends should be able to find openings. And I think that's actually one of Cole Kmet's strengths too, is knowing when to sit down in those open spots. And then it's on the quarterback and the tight end to be on the same page there. Because I think 2 weeks ago on one of those third or fourth downs, it just didn't seem like Cole and Caleb were on the same page in terms of whether or not he was sitting down in the route against zone or continuing to go against man.
Yeah, no doubt. And our friend and frequent visitor, I know, to the Hogan Johns podcast, Kevin Fishbane, did a really good breakdown in The Athletic about that. So, and we're having Fishy Business on a little bit later, so we'll continue the conversation with him here on the Raheemy Harris and Grody Show on The Score, talking to Adam Hogg of that was awesome. Adam Hogg of CHGO and the aforementioned...
Dump him.
I thought you did it on purpose.
No, I didn't. It just came out like that. What did you think, Adam, of Declan Doyle, the Bears' offensive coordinator, saying that the Bears consider, and who knows, maybe have scripted more than one time throughout a game? And we had Tim Jenkins on, who said that they ran some of the same plays, which he said is incredibly rare. What did you think about that?
I got totally distracted by you slowly turning into Grobber in front of us.
Wow.
It's happening. Adam it's Hogg. Been happening for a couple of years.
A lot of people think his name is H-O-G, Hogg.
How do you spell Eagles?
By the way, I do love to tell the story, because Adam has told the story, that the reason Grobber called him Hogg is because one of the producers, Adam Harris, at the time, wrote that, right? He wrote that down. He typed that in for Grobber to see when you came on. He said H-O, or he was giving credit to you for whatever contribution you made to the show that day. So it was written for, if you put it on the teleprompter, Grobber's going to read it, right, Hogg? Isn't that what happened?
Yes, well, but then I think maybe the first time it was a mistake, but then so then when I would come on, he would purposely spell my name wrong, like in the guest line on your guys' call screener. So that one time like it came out Hodge, Hoagie. It came out a few different
Adam
ways.
Adam Hogg says.
That sounds very Adam.
Now I totally forgot the question scripted stuff.
Yeah. Like he talked yesterday about how that they do consider scripting more than once in a game. And the question was in the name of the Bears failing 2 weeks in a row in the third quarter on the first drive, going three and out in both cases.
Yeah. Now, so this comes back to, I think the good play callers have, you have your script, right? Your opening script, but you also have your sort of bread and butter plays that you know you can kind of always go back to. And one of the hallmarks, I think, of Ben Johnson and some of the other good play callers in the league is they're able to run the same play multiple times in a game but have it look different, right? It goes back to what he said at his introductory press conference, make different things look the same things look different. But to be able to do that, you have to be able to trust your players to be able to execute those things. So I think you're starting to see that. I know I saw some Twitter exchange this week where there was a little bit of controversy. That might have been Tim Jenkins. Yeah, now that I think about it. Where he brought up, you know, they kept running this one play.
Yeah.
But I think as long as you're dressing it up differently, you know, you have faith in that play, it can be okay at times. It's easy then to come back and be like, hey, they kept running this and it wasn't working, to be critical of it. And I think that that's fair at that point. But I do think there is something to be said. You're not going to have a full script to start the third quarter, but you got to have a plan of at least five or six things that you know you can go to, because it's those two drives so far this season have been crucial, and the Bears have screwed them up both times. And but regardless of what plays you're scripting up, you can't have the running back false start.
No.
On the first play coming out of halftime.
Period.
It's hard to do anything as a play caller when you start first and 15 because the running back of all people is false starting.
That's Adam Hogg. Our segment with him is brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS. Adam, thanks for the time. We look forward to your thoughts after the game as well on the Hogan Johns podcast.
Thanks, Adam.
All right. Have a great weekend.
Bye, Adam.
Thanks, Adam. We will keep it going with our weekend in wagertainment. There is a massive game in the Big Ten coming up. We will talk about it with Joe Ostrowski and whether or not that over on the Bears and Cowboys game is really worth a look as the line keeps moving. And more. Joe O next on Raheemy Harrison Grody on 670 The Score.
Adam Hogg says,
"We are Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. We're live from Chicago, talking Chicago sports. Listen on your radio, your laptop, your mobile device through the Odyssey app, AUDACY, or tell your smart speaker to play 670 The Score. We're live and we're local. 670 The Score, always live on the free Odyssey app."
This segment is brought to you by Robert Half. At Robert Half, they found that 67% of companies want to increase contract talent. That's why the recruiter's expertise and award-winning AI work quickly to find the skilled candidates you want. At Robert Half, they know talent. Visit roberthalf.com/talent today.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Listen to Raheemy Harrison Grody on the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
Listen, we're talking about practice.
Cardi B the whole hour. Congratulations, Cardi. Glad you're living your best life. And Allen Iverson, too, because if there was one thing I should have done, it was create a trust fund for myself to save me from myself. This is Raheemy Harrison Grody.
Did he get that money yet?
On 670 The Score. Good question.
The
we should follow
back
up.
Money?
We should follow up.
It's crazy.
Allen Iverson was a man ahead of his time when it came to managing money, and so was the person he hired to do it. If there's one thing that we can tell you, I know our disclaimer says it's just sports. What isn't is your finances. Protect your bag. That said, it goes back to the history of AI, of course, was in Philly. We heard from Jason Garrett on Pro Football Talk speak earlier to Mike Florio, who's on with us every week, about the dangers of calling out your team publicly. Dan Hurley felt the opposite. Dan Hurley was like, go get him, Ben Johnson. But he also had a good point, or at least illustrated his point well, Jason Garrett, when it came to the history as to why he felt this way. Here's some more of what he had to say to Mike Florio.
But there is some value to not sharing all that stuff with the world. I interviewed Andy Reid this summer for a leadership program that we're doing. And I asked him about some of the mistakes he made and what he learned from his experience in Philadelphia. And he said, you know, I wasn't forthcoming enough with the media. I was very protective of the team. And he said, you know, I try to be more open now. And clearly we've seen that. But I reminded him, you had a lot of good years in Philadelphia. you won a lot of NFC East championships over your time there, and you're the best coach in that team's history, and sure, you've learned, and maybe you're a little more open in Kansas City, but he's the same way now. So he understands that big picture idea, and so that's my first reaction when I hear that. We love all this, again, authenticity and openness with the public. I mean, that's what we do as media people. But you be careful of bringing that element into your team.
See, I take real issue with this because he's telling Andy Reid about his lived experience. Andy Reid, who's accomplished way more than Jason Garrett ever did. He's in his 27th season coaching. You know why he's been coaching for so long? Because he wins 422. That's how many games he's coached. In those 422 games, Andy Reid is 273, 148, and one, and that tie is infamous because the players didn't know that there were ties, and so that's why they tied the game. That's what Donovan McNabb didn't know that you could tie.
I forgot
in a football
about
game.
That. That was a classic.
So that's a 648 winning percentage. He's now coached almost as many years in Kansas City as he has in Philadelphia. And when he says like transparency and those things, all of that stuff is to say this. The reason he could be more transparent in Kansas City is because he's winning championships. He's going to the Super Bowl every year. When you're doing that, people don't really care as much. Also, Kansas City is not Philadelphia in terms of what the
expectations
are. Just like Chicago is not Atlanta, Grady Jarrett.
Yeah.
Those are two different places. And Andy Reid, while he has, quote unquote, loosened up, it's a lot easier to loosen up when you got Patrick Mahomes out here getting you to the Super Bowl every year.
No, I would say Philly and Chicago, in the famous words of Buddy Ryan, do not suffer fools.
Exactly. And so when you take that into account, I understand what Jason Garrett is trying to say. But I go back to this, what he said initially about Ben Johnson and this idea that, you know, you're oversharing. I don't think Ben Johnson has been oversharing. I think he's walked a pretty good line for a coach that's 0-2 as a head coach. And he has more grace than most people will just because of his resume as a play caller. But I think as the season goes on, people are going to understand why they're so far behind.
Well, I also want to point this out to you two, and I feel like Robbie can speak to this as well, and Ray's a longtime Bears fan. I also feel like you're hearing a coach say maybe he doesn't have the personnel to do the things he wants to do in practice. Mm. You know, the one thing that's similar from last year to this year are your players. You didn't go a whole bunch of new guys. Famously with the list of inactives before the game, you haven't seen them play in games. You know, the ones who were the draft picks. And I'm not pressuring them yet. I'm not there. It's just a matter of how you fold them into the team where there's really a message center and understanding of how you feel about those players, like Ozzie Trapillo, like Shamar Turner, for example. But he doesn't have Brad Holmes. And that's why, again, I was so hesitant about the extension, because it's like, how do you necessarily know if you haven't even been through a full season with this guy in Ryan Poles, whether or not you have the people you want to execute what you want to do? And you're right, Marshall. Andy Reid has a resume. Ben Johnson has a resume that leads me to respect what he has to say more when it comes to the standard. And Mark, I want to get your thoughts on this too, because I think there's a lot there, even in that short statement, from both what Ben Johnson had to say and then also what Andy Reid, or what
Jason Garrett
said about Andy Reid.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say is, like, in order to reach a space of actualization, if you are a head coach, you cannot, this is the ideal to me, you can't insult the sensibilities of the fans to whom you are speaking, the reporters to whom you are speaking. And I think that Ben Johnson and his coaching staff, like Dan Roschar and Eric Bieniemy and all of these guys, Declan Doyle, like, they're pretty honest and open, and we have applauded them for that. But the sweet spot is, don't insult the sensibilities of the fans and the media, and don't lose your locker room. That's why, and you said it perfectly, Marshall, pick your spots. And again, Ben Johnson kind of poking his team. And this wasn't like egregious either. He didn't say the practices suck. He said they're not practicing at a championship level. He is setting the bar high. So, he softened his response. It's not like he's indicting and calling out specific players or even position groups. He is saying, I'm talking about a championship caliber. And if the players in that locker room, many of whom were part of a 10-game losing streak last year, can't see that, then I don't know what they can see. But there does have to be that fine line. And we all appreciate the honesty. But yeah, of course, you got to pick your spots, as Marshall said.
I think, Layla, the big thing, going back to what Jason Garrett said about Andy Reid specifically, and he's like, well, you had success in Philadelphia. Did he win a championship in Philadelphia?
No, he did not.
Almost.
That is the bar.
Yep.
In a place like Philadelphia. Also, Chicago. That is the bar.
The bar is the bear.
I feel like with Philly, the bar was set for a championship, and they hadn't even won one, and that perhaps is a good illustration of why they were mad about what happened. Like, when you see the winnable games, you know, the fans, that was very insulting to them, and I think,
and their sensibilities.
Exactly, and I feel like here, it's not just the one-score games, it's the, you have to say something when we see the highest point total in 11 years given up in a game. Like, it's offensive to people. The Bears' defense is one of those commodities. They'll put up with a lot. Like, 2018, the defense was amazing. We'll talk about an offensive head coach.
Did you just mention 2018, Layla?
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about an offensive head coach.
Dollar in the jar.
Yeah.
I'm into that.
You, Layla.
We'll talk about an offensive head coach if the defense is still good. And what's worse is, this year, we thought the defense was the thing we didn't have to wait to see gel.
Amen.
Amen.
Bears. We'll continue more of our Bears talk here on 670 The Score with our friend Adam Hogue, who I feel like can speak to all of these things. He of the Hogue and Johns podcast. So we will do that next. You're listening to Raheemi Harrison Grody on 670 The Score in the Odyssey and iHeart radio apps.
Tim Jenkins.
I've got people real mad at me in Chicago that how dare you? There's a radio guy up there, Mike North. He was real mad.
Founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite.
I'm Tim Jenkins and welcome to All Things QB, where I watch every single clip and break down the most important ones today.
Breaking down the positives and negatives.
You've seen progressions that align with the quarterback's eye. I hope that's what we get more of, but I hope we continue to see some of these concepts and the way we build things are better for the quarterback versus just looks good on paper.
Tim Jenkins with Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score.
Let's jump into the film.
Let's jump into the film. And we do so with Tim Jenkins, founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite. He works with quarterbacks. He can work with you at T Jenkins Elite on X. And he joins us via the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Tim, I feel like we're talking to you in a case where it's a little bit better today than it was on Tuesday of last week when it came to Caleb Williams' play. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit better for Caleb Williams. Unfortunately, this is why in the NFL you got to win the ones that you can at home, right? We let the Vikings one slip away, and then you go on the road in a what everybody knew was going to be a crazy environment. Right. And then you kind of you feel better about Caleb's performance. Right. Hey, his eyes were in a better spot. It felt like his feet were tied to his progression more. And then at the end of the day, it was like we got, you know, the doors blown off us. So to me, it's like now we're 0-2. You know, you hate being like, oh, hey, what we should be. But in reality, they should be 1-1 if they just finished the job at home on Monday night. Now you're sitting at 0-2. And you guys know how, you know, you start feeling like, OK, hey, we got to get rolling here soon. So that when things do start clicking on offense, we can make a run at the playoffs.
Tim, tell me what you think about Caleb Williams' performance in comparison to what we saw in week one, because I believe he played better.
Yeah, I think if you were to grade him out, and I know there's a lot of stuff floating around on Twitter, I'm going to say tongue-in-cheek about grades, but what I'll tell you is, if you were to grade him out, I think he played a lot better this week from his feet were tied to his progression. So it wasn't like you saw him running his feet and he wasn't like he was rereading a concept. He was there. He was consistently, hey, working whatever his progression is on the play, right? 1 to 2 to 3. It felt like he was tied together there. Honestly, it felt like, and we kind of joked about it last time I came on, it felt like Ben Johnson circled back to some of the scripted calls, right? We called dig with a home run post 3 times. Now we dressed it up out of a different formation, but it felt like we were kind of going back to some of those scripted plays, which then led to him probably playing with more confidence and him being great with the football. Obviously, we have the 2 mistakes. One gets negated from the roughing where we just really can't have, right? Just like putting the ball in harm's way for no reason. But I do think from just playing within the structure of the offense, I thought it was better. It felt like we had less pre-snap penalties. We still had some, but it felt like we had less, which is hilarious that we go on the road and we have less pre-snap penalties. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's hard because I do think in the NFL, you get into these games where you get to 2 or 3 possession ball games. And it's like, yes, I think his eyes were in a better spot. I think his feet were calmer. Simultaneously, like, I'd be lying if I thought that we were getting exotic looks or if we were getting anything but shell coverage where it's like, you know, hey, let him hit this and then we'll go make a tackle because, again, they're playing to win a game. They don't play because they want to keep your box score to look terrible, right? So to me, it's like that's what I think is maybe tougher for me where it's like I'm not as optimistic as maybe I would be if this was a 7 or point ball game where you're like, oh, man, you know, we felt like we were still getting pressure looks. We felt like we were still getting things dialed up. you know, I'd be lying if I said it felt like that down the stretch from what we were getting defensively. With that being said, like, Caleb can only play against what he's got, what he's going against, and I do think he looked cleaner overall. Working through these progressions.
I want to ask you about the eyes. You brought that up, and Ben Johnson did say that the eyes are not always in the right place, and that doesn't mean it's not better relative to last week. But, Tim, what does that mean exactly?
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give you the PhD answer. What I'm going to give you is something to look for. When you watch NFL quarterbacks play, something that's really – the way that you would know that someone doesn't understand what's going on in this play is if he does what's called rereading something. Meaning, if you see a quarterback go from, like, let's say he's looking at DJ Moore off to his right, and then he scans more middle to Komet, and then you see him look back out to the right to DJ Moore, that's called rereading a concept. If somebody's rereading a concept, that means they're not sure where their eyes were to be or supposed to be, so they're just, like, essentially scanning to see who's open, right? They're playing Madden, which, as you guys know, is not realistic when the bullets are flying, the ball's got to be out in 3 seconds, right? We've got to work our progression the way it's supposed to. So that's, like, one way that you can kind of see it on TV, actually, of, oh, this guy's comfortable, or, oh, you know, hey, you know, we still have progress to make. In terms of, like, what Ben's saying, I'm assuming Ben's talking more like higher level of, you know, two shell, three shell, and a really quick, easy way is, you know, two shell means, hey, we got two guys back deep, right? Usually safeties. You know, three shell or single high coverage means you really have one safety back. Usually two corners is how you get to your three shell, but just one guy back could also be a single high. We have a lot of plays where it's a two shell, three shell, meaning, hey, we want you to look to this side against two shell, right? The two guys deep. Or if it's single high, we want you to work to this other side. That's what I would guess where Ben's like, hey, we had this play designed. They gave us a disguise coverage. He didn't get his eyes to the right spot. He got his eyes to what they were disguising, right? They were showing two, they snapped to one or three. And that's probably more what Ben's talking about. And that's what you can kind of see on the tape a little bit of, you know, you get an exotic pressure. It feels like maybe he gets back into that reread, back into that scanning type play. But I tell you, a lot of the stuff where it was like a called shot play, I felt like his eyes were a heck of a lot better this week than they were last week.
We are talking to Tim Jenkins. He of Tim Jenkins Elite. He reviews film. His breakdown of the Bears is out on YouTube right now. You can check that out. And he's on Twitch with us, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score, and Raheem Harris and Grody. And Tim, not to go back to last week, but I do want to, because of something that you talked about on Twitter with Ryan Fitzpatrick when you guys were going back and forth discussing the open DJ Moore's open on the left side against Minnesota. Could have been a touchdown. Caleb Williams did address it midweek. He did talk about how there was an adjustment there. I think DJ probably saw something where he knew he could be open, and that's what you're going to do, try to score. What was your takeaway from that play and just you two discussing it as well? Because I think you had different opinions.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that were like, hey, it's a virtually impossible throw, right, with somebody changing it. If I'm being honest, I just disagree. I would point to a play this week of what Caleb did, the Rome double move, right? So you've got a double move where the corner grabs him, and what does Caleb do? Does he try to throw a perfect ball, or does he throw what we would call like a body up shot, meaning like, hey, we won with scheme, basically, right? Let me just make sure I don't miss this. That's exactly what he throws. And I would make the argument, like, and this is just my perspective. Listen, I didn't have the career Fitz did, but just from coaching guys, what I could tell you is I think it's a heck of a lot harder to body up a throw where a defender makes contact so much that we get a flag on a double move than it is when we have a clean release. I think ultimately, and I think if you were really to get Caleb one-on-one and not in like a media environment and say, hey, obviously, we just need to body that throw up, meaning don't try to make the perfect throw to the pylon. You know, hold him up. Even if he gets tackled short, he gets tackled short. And that's what I come down on it. I mean, obviously, it's harder knowing the context of the fact that, hey, they had mirrored bench coming and, you know, DJ converts it to a go. Of course, that's harder. Mm-hmm. Simultaneously, you know, we have guys adjust routes based on broken coverages all day, every day across the National Football League. And we have quarterbacks making body up throws. Like, here's where I think this argument is tough for me. Nobody And I don't know, maybe you guys would tell me, hey, I'm wrong. I don't think any of us four would tell you that we think Caleb Williams will either be like, he's not going to fail as an NFL quarterback because of lack of gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right. Nobody's sitting here saying, I just don't even know if physically he can get it done. So we've agreed that he can rip the ball and do things with a football that there's not a lot of people that can do it.
And
then we can't then say, oh my gosh, the level of difficulty on that throw. Like, dude, that's the point. Like, that's the difference between a Caleb Williams or, you know, like a guy who grinds it out 14 years in the league, but, you know, isn't a first overall pick. That's the difference. Like, we took him number one because he can make insane throws. We can't then say, hey, we had DJ Moore wide open, but that's a really tough throw. Like, you got me under center? Sure. Call it a tough throw because I wouldn't have made it.
Right.
But like when you take these guys number one overall and we all agree he's got traits that are not common, we then have to expect throws like that to be able to be bodied up down the field because guess what? He'll go sprint to his right and throw it 48 yards on a dime. And like that's what he can do. So to me, it's like that's where I think the whole discussion kind of got blown out of context. And I get it. Like, you know, like right now it's like popular to be on one side of it. I don't think we know remotely what Caleb's going to be in this offense yet. Cause I just don't even think he's operating this offense yet. And that's okay. But to me, we still have to be able to say like, hey, I'm not going to say Caleb's the greatest ever. I'm not going to say he's a bust. I'm just going to evaluate the tape. Simultaneously, that's a throw that he's very capable of making. And I think like he would say that. And Ben Johnson sitting in the meeting room behind closed doors saying that. So to me, that's where I think that whole conversation, not with me and Ryan, but like everyone, I just think it got crazy.
Oh, and everybody has an opinion. If you get out there in those Twitter streets, if you will, or social media in general, I'm looking at what he's been able to do. And I know every week it's like we're revealing a little bit more of the puzzle and we're trying to solve the puzzle, right? You got another puzzle piece last week. Looking at that and knowing how Ben Johnson's offense looked in Detroit, and I know this is different because he's got different personnel, but do you feel like Caleb Williams took a step forward in that sense in terms of Ben Johnson's been a guy who says he's got to come to me? And I'm like, well, you got to tailor this thing around him too.
Yeah, I think operationally, I think Caleb probably took a step operationally. I'm guessing they were way cleaner with timing of motions and everything like that. It just looked more sound operationally. And I tell you that I think Ben kind of did come to him talking about, you know, hey, reloading some of those scripted calls.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, and this is, and you know, people are going to take this and run with it one way or another. The amount of times we got back to a scripted call, and again, we dressed it up differently, but it was the same concept, is very unusual.
Oh.
Like, that does not happen in the NFL in terms of like very rare. We saw, I think, the same play called three, maybe four times with that dig in the shot post.
Hmm.
You know, doing Denver, doing Miami, doing all these other teams, that is rare. Like, we do not see reloaded plays that often. You know, like we were borderlining on where I would start to worry, and I'm coaching third grade tackle right now. You know what I mean? Like, I'm starting to think the kids are recognizing it. So I do think he was adjusting to kind of meet Caleb there of saying, hey, I know we've got all these shifts, we've got all these motions, we're running these out, all these different formations. Let me, you know, try to reload some of these concepts for you. So I think he did that. And I think Caleb probably took a step in the right direction. Ultimately, like, to me, though, the things that I walked away were he had a couple of misses where it was just like, man, we just can't miss this. This is a rhythm throw. Like, he's open. We got to take that. And then just the two decisions where, it more or less felt like he was being, you know, like, this is like a quarterback room, but like, it was almost like, hey, we were being disrespectful with like our, you know, reverence for the football. Like, we have to take care of the football. And the two INTs were kind of more or less just like lazy. And I think that's easy to clean up, you know, once you have those discussions.
You're listening to the Raheem Harris and Grody Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. We're talking to our QB expert, Tim Jenkins. I want to follow up on that because you're right, Tim. People are going to take that, what you just said, and run with it. So I think I'm going to ask you the question that a lot of people are going to be asking when you say that they reloaded some of the concepts and how rare it is to twice do scripted plays. Why are they needing to do that for Caleb Williams? Does that mean that he is not getting the rest of what Ben Johnson is laying down?
Like, you know, and again, here we go. That's why I want to nip this in the bud right now, Tim.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, and it's fine. I just, if I'm being honest, I don't think there's another way to interpret it, right? Yeah. Like, if you're reloading a play that we repped a bunch because it's scripted, there's no other way to interpret it other than, hey, we're not putting in a full, you know, 90-play game plan, right? We're going to put in 60. With that being said, is that like ultra concerning for me in week two? No. Yeah. And it's just because of the context of Caleb Williams. Like, you've got to think about this from like zoom out, big picture. There is no shot his youth football coach was coaching him. Caleb was just probably the best kid out there, running and throwing. Then in high school, he was, oh, I'm just going to ride this dude to a state. Right? Like, you guys know what it's like coming up in football for these generational guys. Like, and then, like, you know, again, I'm not trying to take a shot at Lincoln, but like, it's not the most complex thing in the world pre-snap, right? Because they're going fast. They're prioritizing going fast over winning with a shift in emotion. Then you get to the NFL and your rookie year was really a wash. Just like, you potentially played for an offensive coordinator that I don't know if this has ever been confirmed, but doesn't script. Like, that's insane. We got to throw that out. So it's like the first time you've been asked to do this. And that's a lot. Like, it's a lot just to spit out the verbiage and then to handle everything and then have your eyes in the right spot on a PSL, two shell, three shell. Like, I know it's not popular because he gets paid so much money and he got taken number one overall to say, hey, we got to have patience, but like, it is what it is. So that's why I'm not concerned yet. If we're in week eight reloading, I'd start to say like, dang, that's concerning because we're not picking it up right at all. I'm just not concerned with it week two. And I think to me, it's like the coach has obviously decided, hey, this guy is, you know, let's just make sure his eyes are in the right spot. And like, listen, I tell you, we ran that play a bunch. The safety started to jump the dig route and he fitted in there. Right. And that's the piece of this that we're talking about of why you took him number one overall. Right. Like, you get a guy like me under center. Shoot, you better run 90 plays because the ball ain't going to get there fast. Right. So it's like the guy better be open. Caleb, you can reload stuff, and guess what? He's going to fit it in there. That, to me, is kind of more reconfirming of why you took him where you took him, and then now it's about developing him into who he should be. I don't want to go on too long, but I, like, have one comparison. It's like almost like Cam Newton. Like, watching Cam Newton's evolution, it was like he never got asked to play quarterback until he got to New England, and by then it was too late. But if we do this correctly and we develop Caleb as a quarterback with all these gifts, by the time that his quote unquote skill set starts to decrease, his mental aptitude will be so high that he will then have sustained success for the long term in Chicago versus like, hey, we had a great run with 4 years for him. And then like his gifts started to fade. So then, you know, hey, we couldn't overcome it. That's the point of developing these guys. So you don't have, you know, a Cam at the back half of his career. And that's what I think, like, we got to have the patience for. But I also get, like, it's the NFL, we're 0-2. Like, we got to win some football games.
Tim, I'm glad you did expand on that. That's exactly what we're looking for. So don't ever be afraid to go off.
I appreciate that. Yeah, sometimes, though, my wife tells me, you got to, you know, kind of calm down. You know, you're kind of holding court at the dinner table too much.
You know what? The Jenkins family is a well-oiled machine. I'm not here to mess up that flow. But here, no, we want that stuff. So thank you for doing it.
Well, I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Tim. That was Tim Jenkins, founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite. If you want more, check out his YouTube video. It came out last night. I got about a quarter of the way through it, but I had to listen to Ben Johnson. I was watching the Pirates and Cubs game. There was a lot happening.
That was good. Great. That stuff on Caleb was pretty amazing. By the way, Robbie, send over some dinner to the Jenkins family.
That's a large family.
Set them up. Yeah, set them up. Just send it right on over.
Eats, right?
Got that? Thank you.
Boneless buffalo wings for the kids.
It's all the way to Colorado.
He's getting some Klonopin as well.
That was Tim Jenkins. Coming up next on Raheemy and Harrison Grody, we have to talk about the massive conflict of interest in the NFL, where I'm pretty sure if it's anybody else, it doesn't happen. You're listening to the Raheemy Harrison Mark Grody Show on 670 The Score in the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.